And, you know, our advocacy efforts, you know, make Water Over Nickel, good effort that's underway. Shout out to Kelly Applegate from Mille Lacs for moving that. They received an Emmy. So now some of these messages and concerns are beginning to reach the other levels, and you have celebrities and others that are weighing in as we try to protect the earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sharon Day's efforts with water. Mm-hmm. You know, we really need to step up, as we don't know what will happen in our future for, you know, the next couple of years regarding environmental investments and impact. But shout out to your little youngster, your young advocate that's grown as an advocate through your, you know,
you're talking about young Ms. Okwe Edwards, aka yes. Sierra. She was listening.
She hit
us up. She was listening to the show.
She's that voice though that we're talking mm-hmm. about, yeah. and you know, reports back are like, we're missing a voice in, you know, some of our messaging, and, mm-hmm. and that's the voice we kept coming back to. And I think about a conversation with my cousin, who is very much on the same messaging platform of, mm-hmm. you know, WWBD, what would Bernie do? I'm not saying CC's associated with Bernie, I'm saying my cousin. And yeah. I had a deep discussion about that. And I was like, maybe we are missing a voice. Maybe mm-hmm. people were in a bubble and not really listening to more voices.
Mm-hmm.
That we're outside the usual demographic. And so whatever it may be, get involved. Contribute back to Turtle Island. Give back to our great island here. And no matter what nation you represent. And protect it. Preserve it. Just like we do our culture and our language and our livelihood.
Uh-huh.
No matter where you are in this democratic voting society.
Yes.
Just give back and protect.
Miigwech for those mm-hmm. words. Chi Miigwech, thank you so much for tuning in to our special broadcast here of Beats, Rhymes, and Democracy, Turtle Island Voices Rising. Up next, we got Robert Pilot. Thanks to the staff here at KFAI for holding us down and helping to make these community-specific programming efforts possible. So,
Miigwech, thank you very much.
Miigwech. We'll holler at y'all next week.
Hey, y'all, in it. I hope you know. Sunrise Banks is proud to sponsor Turtle Island's Voices Rising on KFAI. At Sunrise Banks, your financial choices give you power. As a certified B Corp, their innovative banking services are designed to turn each transaction into a ripple of positive change. That's why they're working with you to help build a brighter future for everyone who lives and works in the Twin Cities. Sunrise Banks, where every dream has a place to grow. SunriseBanks.com. Member FDIC.
Hit it.
Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Online and archived at kfai.org. It's where community grows.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
KFAI is proud to present La Femme at the Fine Line on Saturday, November 16th.
Since 2010, French psych-punk rock band La Femme has toured all over the world. With retro-futuristic sounds, their music is timeless, beyond fashion.
Opening the show is techno-pop princess Sam Queeley.
Tickets for La Femme can be found at the First Avenue website. Visit first-avenue.com for more details.
Programming on KFAI is supported in part by Health Partners. Minnesotans age 65 plus might qualify for Health Partners Minnesota Senior Health Options. The plan includes personal support, coverage for medical, prescription drugs and dental, plus many extra benefits. Eligibility information is available at healthpartners.com/oneplan. Health Partners is a health plan that contracts with both Medicare and the Minnesota Medical Assistance Medicaid program to provide benefits of both programs to enrollees. Enrollment and Health Partners depends on contract renewal. More information at healthpartners.com/oneplan.
Good day to be indigenous. They are going to become more brutal.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade, which means distant thunder. Hey, Cudgee Wee, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, special edition of Turtle Island Voices Rising here on KFAI.
Yeah, shout out to our friends at KFAI 90.3 FM, St. Paul and Minneapolis's Fresh Air Community Radio. We're so thankful that you guys allow our program, Native Roots Radio, to be uplifted, especially today with your programming, Turtle Island's Voices Rising.
Well, Chujunk, we, Fresh Air Radio, Community Radio provides all day long Native American programming in support of National Native American Heritage Month. So we're really excited to be on for a couple hours here and talk to our friends all over Turtle Island. And what we are really excited about is our guest tonight. We're going to start out with the president of Ho-Chunk Nation, and then we're going to have Representative Heather Keeler on, and then we're going to do some music segment with Angie Vega, Big Guitars here in the Twin Cities. So we are really excited. John, can you hear us?
I can.
Right on. Big PND president, and I'm really excited to have you on. I know years ago when Native Roots Radio started, you were a regular on there and had such great segments. And I know in years past we've had special the best of John Greendeers on hour long of the president of at the time former president of Ho-Chunk Nation, but again president of Ho-Chunk Nation, and really excited to have you on. I'd like to just talk a little bit about the history of Ho-Chunk and, you know, what is the traditional story of Ho-Chunk people and where did we come from? And start out with that, John. And again, Pinigigi, thank you so much for being on.
Well, thanks for choosing such a real small question. So, this should only take a minute. No. Well, I'm never sure where to start the story because, you know, we are what they call, we have this prehistory going back, at least in the area, to the Ice Ages, 14,000 years ago, even beyond. So I think we try to cover everything by saying our story begins at time immemorial. And we talk about how we lived centuries ago, thousands of years ago, and that we carried this oral tradition that we still see a lot of the vestiges of our traditional and cultural way of life today. I'm going to be very cautious not to overly romanticize our history. I know a lot of people do, provocative writers, anthropologists, archaeologists. If you need to sell books, all you have to do is embellish a history. I try to do my best to find the level ground in telling the version of the story that I have been told over time and time. And it's also important to know that a lot of people may have heard things a little bit differently along the way. And when we talk about oral tradition, first of all, we're talking about a history that is not as objective as we'd like to believe, what our maybe our Western education model has kind of forced us to believe what is right, wrong, true, false, A, B, yes, no, up, down, left, right. And so our history, at least the way we tell it, isn't like that. It's almost like it's been told to us and we respect that. And I always give the example, when we go out and see a movie and try to describe that movie, no one who's seen that movie is going to describe that the same way. And it's okay. It's okay to tell that story from your perspective or from how you heard or remember things. It's when we start to memorialize our history into books and, you know, tape and all these studies, academic studies, that we start to anchor that into a thought and start to compare everything we hear to that. So, you know, and then the other portion of this, and I kind of touched on a little bit in terms of embellishing, you know, our history, one of the elements that people like to use in, especially from post-colonial times, is white saviorism. And that means that telling our story from the perspective of someone who honestly and genuinely believes that they were a part of our survival. They talk about Indigenous communities as they survived by doing this. And we didn't survive. We've lived for thousands of years. We've actually helped colonists, you know, to survive themselves who weren't equipped to do so. So we, at least as far as our Ho-Chunk people go, we never owned the land. We had territory that we protected so that we could continue to farm and to hunt, to gather. This land is said to have gone from our place of origin in Green Bay all the way to the cities and the neutral territory down to St. Louis, up to Chicago, and then Wisconsin's beautiful East Coast. And versions of the story will have you outside of that. But our story begins in Mogoshuch, or the Red Banks area, which is Green Bay, our sacred land, and probably the reasons why the Packers are the best team in the NFL. Sorry, Wakanja Hadi.
You got a nice shirt on there, Mr. President. I just want to
I got a gopher in the house. So
yeah, gophers.
That's right. Proud of her too. But you know, in terms of that, I try not to jump into the indoctrinated idea that we had survived. When we did encounter folks who had really pushed hard for homesteads and farmsteads, we had battles on many fronts, whether we were fighting the U.S. Army, whether we were fighting British, whether we were fighting other tribes, whether we were fighting environmental conditions or disease. The Ho-Chunk people have always been a fierce tribe, and we built our traditional way of life around our war bundles, bundles that had accumulated what we felt were our friends, those who we had met in battle, those who to this very day help us along the road, that we acknowledge the help that they've given us from the soldiers who brought them home. And, you know, from time to time, these clans, these bundle keepers will call for our traditional feasts where we will serve other clans and families and host them and acknowledge those spirits so that we can continue to do our roles. These aren't just practices or programmatic items. You know, it's really coming down to an endearing responsibility that we have to those who are the reason why we're still alive today. And I know that sounds a little political, but given what we had faced in terms of the wars that we were outnumbered in and the plagues that we had upon our communities and basically the scourge and the policies of termination and even extermination, the genocide that the U.S. federal government and, you know, the budding community had placed on our people, we shouldn't be here today. Yet we kept these things together. We kept these traditions alive. We've had to move them into remote areas. We've had to move them into night ceremonies. We had to protect our language, our songs, our stories, our kinships, our relation with other allies. So it, you know, in a lot of cases, it was a struggle, but mainly I think the older ones, and I mean the ones that are probably no longer here, spoke more highly about our gift of adaptation. And that went along more than just the physical, but our social, our political adaptation, our cultural adaptations. Those types of things. When we were moved off into the marshes to perish, we found foods and medicines there that kept us alive and kept us thriving in that regard. All the way up to a more contemporary version of our political structure, which I still laud as probably one of the most sophisticated governments, bar none, way superior than the United States federal government. In all of our intricacies, our complexities, and how we govern, I don't think that there's even a remote comparison to how proud I am of the system of social organization that we have. So, you know, this every aspect of this question can be a book, and I don't want to say that too loud because I know there's a million anthropologists with their keyboards ready to go. But, you know, just to keep things take my cautious steps here, you know, we have adapted in all those realms, you know, again, especially politically. And, you know, and obviously, you know, in terms of our business acumen overall, we have learned to understand what a market is. And we learned to build our abilities, not simply from gaming either. And I think a lot of people, because that shrouds a lot of the tribes in the Midwest and some out in the East, some more in the West, which are either gaming or mineral corporations, the way they're structured. But we've learned to adapt economically and have become a major engine in the states that we reside in, and certainly one of the largest employers in just about every county that we are in. So keep in mind, we have, you know, well over 200-year-old, 250-year-old government here in the United States, nestled with a 60-year-old government that has surpassed the abilities of the United States, you know, their version of democracy light years ago. So I'm proud of the nation as to how we've utilized that ability to adapt, not only back in during prehistory, but also today in the contemporary history, where we do have cultural, social, and political and economical organization right in front of us.
We're here with President John Greendeer of the Ho-Chunk Nation. And I think you've been reading my questions here. So you've already answered about three of my questions. So I appreciate that. One of the things I'd like to know is, what is your role in our nation, and how does tribal government compare to others?
Others as in other tribes?
Yeah.
Or,
oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, you know.
We don't have to get down.
I'll tell you what, you know, I'm going to start with the back end first. You know, it's a rare treat for me to be in the company of other presidents, other chairmen, other governors. There's an unspoken language that those who have sat at the dashboard of the cockpit of their nation, seemingly wielding a lot of power, but in actuality, carrying a lot of burden of responsibility. And there's a look that we have, I think, that we share that, you know, it's not defeated. It's just, you've seen everything. And, you know, to approach some of the contemporary issues from a position where people are looking to you to provide some decency in leadership, faith in leadership, where it doesn't really come too often. No one calls up a politician and tells them how great of a job they do. they usually have a complaint or a need. And the amount of translating of just simply understanding that you have to listen with a different filter when you hear a question that might not be a question, it might be a statement built into there, and having that connection, being able to understand your people, can only be done by being with your people, being there when you know you're needed, which is when things aren't going so great. That's when you want to see your leadership, and I think Indian country has really no room for fair weather leadership. We need to be there when there's hard times in front of us, and I'm very comfortable there. I don't like being there, but I'm comfortable there, and also not being as alarmist as, you know, some of the factions can be, and how they manufacture crises or they build all these paper dragons for people to fight, and you know, you're still compelled to, you know, be kind and be diplomatic and speak with brevity and, you know, keep the waters calm, because you don't have that privilege to just shoot your mouth off. And so I think, you know, in comparison to other tribes, there's a lot of things that we're very similar at in terms of sharing and having that responsibility, but also in terms of how we govern, you know, we take a look at this on an objective basis. So we don't have a land base like a lot of tribes, a contiguous reservation. I always have to describe people, you know, what if you were the mayor of, you know, Milwaukee, but Milwaukee blew up into 60 different pieces of property, and you had jurisdiction over some of them and not all of them. And you know, you try to do something nice and build a basketball court in one area, and then you got four other areas upset you didn't build it over there. Ho-Chunk has a lot of issues in terms of providing equitable service model, not an equal, but an equitable service model for folks. And when times get lean and there's a need out there, for example, childcare, we build one childcare facility and all of a sudden communities are like, where's ours? They're not wrong. It's just, we have to find a way to, understand that it's not as easy. And I don't want to say that about other tribes, but it's not as easy just to go forward and thinking you're fixing something. You might create more problems doing that. So our approach is always a little bit more sophisticated, a little bit more acute. Just serving a tribe like another tribe would do may mean that, you know, we've got to drive out to our areas. If we're going to teach them about nutrition, if we're going to teach them about, car seat safety, that might mean taking two workers offline for an entire day rather than just having a half hour class. So with that becomes, you know, a more costly venture. And it increases the risk for, you know, road miles, and especially in Wisconsin, Minnesota. There's big parts of the year that it's just not safe to be putting 3 hours on the road. Ask a guy who does this every day. So that's in comparison to the other tribes that, I see out there.
You know, I really have learned a lot, and I don't really talk much about this, that I'm a representative of District 4, but I've learned so much. And one of the amazing things is we have a court system, but we also have a traditional court system. And how do those two play, John, in decision-making and having the nation move forward on things?
Very good question. I might not have all the answers to this because there are what scholars would call a lot of gray matter in how laws or cases in controversy are decided. There might be some deference to the traditional court for some items. We always have to remember that, you know, constitutionally, our general counsel has the ability to turn over really any decision of the court, of the legislature, of the executive. We derive our powers from that. So I would say that they're probably the supreme law of the land. But when we have issues come up that, you know, may not be articulated in legislative or statutes or in court or case law, things that you want to be on a foundation to do something that is culturally appropriate first. And there are a lot of things that, you know, could fall to question. One example that where you see a mix of tribal trial court and traditional law is things like probate. You know, we never know how long we're going to be here, but if something were to happen and we didn't have a will, how would we normally handle that? You know, even our kinship system has a response to that. You know, if, you know, when my brother passed, there's a reason why his kids call me dad. It's my responsibility to take care of his wife and his kids just like I would my own. And this was very, you know, endemic to an environment where, you know, our men relatives didn't come home sometimes, and we had to have a system of care, just like the maternal side, you know, a mother, sisters, all share the same children. So when we have issues of probate, which is very complex and very, you know, time consuming, you know, a traditional court has issued that, you know, in our traditional way, the decision making and or the remaining estate would go to the discretion of the oldest male family member in the household. And so that seemed, you know, a little bit more appropriate, you know, for those who don't have a will. That's kind of been the default that the courts have deferred onto. We also have things like WOSHKA leave or way of life leave. And that kind of changes a little bit, but the idea would be that if you wish to perpetuate your cultural way of life, that you could do so without losing your pay. And this is kind of at the advice of the traditional court, who doesn't always agree on certain things. There may be some issues regarding, you know, in terms of a culture within a culture, having the right to have discretion over things from the blades of the grass all the way to the tops of the trees are a bear clan, our leader of our lower clan, you know, and our caretakers up in the upper clan, our warriors who share roles from either or, but also take the responsibility when there isn't someone from there to do that. So there's quite a few, you know, remaining cultural tenets that sometimes get obscured with, the political gadflies and their lawmaking and policymaking. But the one thing about the traditional court is, if you ask them, they're going to have an opinion, and it doesn't have to be necessarily related to tradition or law. So, yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one. We're here with President John Greendeer of Ho-Chunk Nation. And John, I just have to say this because I look up to you in a good way. And I want to let our audience know that John was a write-in candidate and won overwhelmingly to be president of Ho-Chunk and lead the great nation of Ho-Chunk Nation again. And so I just want to personally tell you and the thousands of people that are listening on the air, a big peeny geegee, thank you so much for stepping up and stepping in and in this time of need, especially after COVID and all these things that have been really struggles for a lot of communities and nations all over Turtle Island.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. And I'm going to do something I don't usually do because of my own built-in narcissism, but I want to put something to rest here. You're right. It was an overwhelming support to have me coming in. I promised I would never do this again, so I feel like I kind of came in on a lie. But you have to remember, and you have to, for me, I have to check my bags a little bit. And I was so worried about who the people were going to vote for. But when I started to think of what the people were voting for, it made sense to me. The people had just come off a Trump administration. And at the same time, we had the former president. And it was just shocking, at some point to wake up and just not even be moved by the absurdity of the news and what's going on. It's, for me, I believe our people spent a long time on the national front, just fearing this void of uncertainty that they had in front of them. From the nation side, in an administration that hung their hat on transparency, and I say this every time, I have never been so in the dark in that four-year administration as to what our nation was doing and how they were conducting themselves. I lost complete contact in the nation for those 4 years. So I think what the nation was voting for was something a little bit more closer to familiarity. People that, a leadership that was communicating, even if it was just a little bit. They were looking at things to not be a surprise. They wanted to be involved. They wanted to know what's going on. I still think the apathy is rather low from the constituency, and we control how much we want to bring into that. However, I also feel like in terms of leadership, in terms of elected leadership, because the factions roll so high that when we say we're going to open the doors, we already know who's waiting at those doors. They're the same people that were waiting at the general counsel microphone. They're the same people that celebrate every misstep of the nation. They're the same people that you'll never hear congratulate whenever we do anything. They're just out there. And unfortunately, the people that have nothing but contempt for the nation seem to get the most traffic because they can jump on a computer and say whatever they want without reprisal. And I'll keep bringing this up. I have no problem doing that. I am serving our people for as long as our people need us to. And but I'm certainly not going to let the voice of the people who are disgruntled, and I'll respect that. There's at some point the nation checked them somewhere, or something didn't go right, or they just don't like, you know, how someone looks or how they act. But at the same time, those aren't the biggest issues on my desk every single day. And so I have a good office that reminds me that we have to keep doing the big stuff. Let them play with the ball of yarn, let them do the things that they need to do, make QR codes, make these Facebook posts, you know, do all these things and live with the decisions that they've made in their lives. But for me, the biggest things in the nation right now really encompass, the amount of homelessness, amount of, you know, our plan as a leader, as a group of leaders to, you know, put restrictions on ourselves so that we can leave a good nation to the next generation. Because at some point, Robert, we're going to have things on cruise control and someone else has got to take over and make those decisions. And we don't want to leave them with, you know, bad resource, no resources or bad tools.
Absolutely. You know, we're here with President John Greendeer of Ho-Chunk Nation. John, I know your time's valuable and you've had a full day with our veterans, and all right. I just want you to have an opportunity to speak your truth in the last minute or so, and then we're going to let you go, and we're going to have State Representative Heather Keeler come up right after you.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, first of all, thanks to you and your family out in the airwaves. As you know, we can talk about these good things. But Ho-Chunk people are done hearing all the talk. They want to see the results. And for us as an administration, you know, we have to make sure that our actions probably precede our words. Sometimes we have to, you know, bite the bullet and, you know, make big decisions. And I'm very proud of our nation's legislature, of our governing body, because we've proven in our actions that we are here for our people. And I don't walk into this job saying I didn't want to do this. When I decided I was going to run for this seat, that I'm all in and I'm excited about the things that we have coming down the line. We've learned how to disagree really well and still be progressive. As a matter of fact, some of our darkest days that we talk about in our nation's young government, where we were battling each other, we were still building empires. The things that they built during their hardest times are the things that we benefit from today. We also had, you know, high unemployment and, you know, a lot of health concerns. Our ACE scores in general were very high, but yet we did the most. So we can't use a lot of things as an impediment. And I think right now we are going to probably be, by the time we get done, we better be the most progressive nation, and we better be out in front of all these nations in the what's now the United States, because that's where they had us a long time ago, and they deserve to see our best. So again, thank you for having me on the show. I'm really excited to see what the next big steps that we have in front of us are going to be. So again, yeah.
Big Pinigi, thank you so much, John. Great leader, and I consider you a friend, and thank you again for coming on.
All right, thank you, folks. Take care.
Right on. Wow, Haley, that's the president of Ho-Chunk Nation.
Yeah, always good words coming from John.
Hey, we have our friend, State Representative Heather Keeler, up next here, and why don't we bring her along? Hey, how's it? I almost sounded like Bob Blake there. Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, it's going good. It's going good. How are y'all?
Good. We want to congratulate you on your victory. And I know the victory is filled with, as state representative, is filled with a lot of things. So I just want to give you a big shout out and let you know that people here, as you know, Haley and I and our friends and that listen to Native Roots Radio are here for you.
Whew, You know, I was just saying to Haley, like, I really hope I don't cry on this segment. And then you go and you like started off with that. And I just feel like so deep in my feelings right now. And I kind of like, thank you for that. But it's the most somber, like, congratulations I've been getting over the last week. You know, I mean, we worked really, 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 really hard in this campaign to turn out Indian Country and to do things that we thought were going to be successful. And, you know, just feels like a gut punch. But now it's time to get back to work and pull things together and come together. And like, I mean, we're resilient people, but that doesn't mean that our feelings are not involved. So thanks for the congratulations. But it's this one feels a little different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're here for you. And I truly believe that, you know, we've gone through rough times. And I know in, you know, 2004, we had Bush. And then 2 years later, we ended up with the Senate. And I'm talking nationally, the Senate and the House. And then 2 years later, we got Obama. So those are the historical things that I like to hold on to in the future. We just need to hold on and keep fighting like we have been and support each other, Heather.
Yeah, I think that's like the whole part of it. And I think the lesson that I hope we've learned here is that it's extremely important for us to go out and be in community, listen to community. Like, our needs are changing. The world is changing around us. The things that we want and desire for our next generations are different. And, you know, I hope that as we heal, we really come together. I see a lot of hate, you know, and like we know that we're going to be surrounded by hate. And so it's like an even more critical time for us to lead with love. And I've been saying that. I mean, you guys know that's how I run my campaigns. That's how I do this work. I talk about my bipartisanship because I know it's important. I didn't know how critical it was going to be going into the Minnesota House in a tie, that the work that I've done being bipartisan could really help us get some good work done together. But geez. We got a lot going on, Robert.
Yeah, we do. And then we have to fall back on family. And I know, like, I saw a picture just recently, like in the last hour, your son's home. And those are things that are important. And, you know, I have grandchildren now, and those are important things that are deep in our soul that we need to keep fighting and keep our head above, because Haley and I opened up on our regular show how difficult it was for us to be on air after the election.
Yeah.
And so we needed to take that deep breath, Haley.
Yeah. And it's important too. Like, you can't just preach. Like, we talk on Native Roots Radio and we have, you know, professionals on who, you know, preach taking care of your mental health, preach taking care of your spirit. And we have Robert Lilligren on every Thursday who talks about how he's changed his workforce and how, you know, his team at NACD, you know, it's take care of themselves, their families first, and then come to work. And if we, you know, if we don't take care of ourselves, but we continue to preach it on radio, like, what is that, you know? Yeah. So it means a lot to, you know, just take care of yourself, pick yourself back up, but also let yourself feel those feelings. Because if you don't, you know, that's not healthy either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like, I talk about my mental health a lot, even when we were in the good, right? Like, it was hard work when we were in the trifecta. And I know, you know, I've said a lot that this work is hard. I mean, this work is not made for the weak, for sure, right? Like, I have no clue how I ended up here. But what I know is that, like, I really want to be able to look my kids in the eye and say I did everything I could to make this world a better place for them. And that takes a lot of courage, that I'm out of my comfort zone like crazy. Y'all know I was an Indian education liaison. Like, I, this just wasn't what I thought I was going to be doing. And so I think as we heal, I want the message to be really clear that all of us are going to have to step out of our comfort zone a little bit. If we want to really protect sovereignty, we can be mad right now and we can be in our feelings and we're there and we feel that. But the one thing I know is we've been resilient forever. And it means we have to get back up together. We have to do this. We have to be ready to fight, right? Like, brush ourselves off. I said it earlier to you, Haley, in a text, like, we're the seeds of the generations that they tried to dissolve. right? Like, we know what this feels like. It's not the first time we've had a gut punch from the U.S. government. Like, we've been doing this. The difference is now we have people at the table. We have Peggy at the table. Mm-hmm. We have Mary at the table. We have Charisse at the table. Like, we have Auntie Deb at the table. We still have people at the table. And so I think we have to build power, and we have to build back, and we have to be honest, and we have to listen to our community, because they matter and our needs matter. And so, like, we can be sad, but I also, you know, really wanted to come on. This is my first interview since like the election and just kind of navigating everything. And really, really, really want to be a voice of collectiveness, of healing, and like fighting for the things that we know. And that's our language. That's our family. That's our land. And that's, you know, how we do this together, in a good way together. And so, utilizing the airwaves today to kind of share that message.
Well, I really appreciate it, and it's great to hear from you, and you're always inspiring to me, and I know the audience loves you, and it's great that you're here with us on KFAI, because we have the whole Twin City area plus listening to us, and your words are music to me, and I appreciate you, and yeah, I appreciate you coming on, especially after this, and talking about these things, you know, mental health and things like that are very mystic in some ways, but also very heartfelt with the person that is going through stuff. It's, we just have to talk. We just have to have our circle and talk. And I appreciate you again.
Mm-hmm. You know, we go back to the story of like how I got here sometimes was that like my community said that representation matters. And often I think that that means as an Indigenous queer woman that they want me to represent in that space. And I've learned that like mental health needs representation too, because like it's one of those silent things that all of us deal with, along with, right, like violence, domestic violence, sexual assault. Like there's all these things that we don't talk about, but all really impact us. And so, you know, in politics, it's been really interesting because often they say, you know, like if we show emotion or we cry in committee or we cry during a heartfelt testimony, we are too weak to do this job. Or if we say we're tired or we say we want to go be a mom to our kids, then, you know, like basically go find another job. We're not built for it. And the truth is, like, I think having empaths in this work is why we do the good that we do. You know, we do cry because, you know, the work we're doing out here is to address access to mental health on high critical levels, like a psychiatric residential treatment facility for kids is needed in the state. And my county wants to be able to provide that, but that means that they're really hard conversations. And so I think we need to start leaning into leadership with empathy is like exactly what we need. And that means like, we don't have to not cry. We don't have to act tough. We don't have to say we're okay when we're not okay. And I think we need to be okay with like, if you say to somebody, how are you today? And they say back, not great. Like we know that that becomes a common response because they think right now we're all triggered, right? Like when you say, how are you? The first response we all feel like we have to say is I'm good. I'm okay. Mm-hmm. When the reality is, I believe many of us are not. And so I think we just have to be more comfortable with acknowledging that maybe we're not okay and leaning into each other and supporting each other. Maybe the best healing like we need, you know, we don't need all these big pharma medicines. We really just need each other to lean in with some love.
Yeah, definitely. And I agree 100%. And I just look forward to the future now because like you have your sons and I have my grandchildren and we really do have to fight. And what that means is different for other people, different for every person, whether it's a mother taking care of their children or somebody going to work to pay the bills, that's taking care of themselves and helping community.
Mm-hmm. I think too, we need to be mindful of what our neighbors are going through. You know, there's different pockets of us, you know, and the intersectionality of some of who we are as Indigenous people. I think we have a fear of what's going to happen. As queer people, we have a fear of what's going to happen. As women, we have a fear of what's going to happen. And you collectively put all of that together. We really, really have to be kind to our neighbors, because I say right now, if like nothing in your life is on the chopping block, like you are living a pretty privileged life, because there's some of us who are really, really terrified of what this will do to the people that we love, to the way that we love and live in this world. And it's detriment to who we are as the future generations. And so I just, you know, for listeners out there, you know, be in your own feelings, but also really be supportive and mindful of how your neighbors are feeling right now and the fears that they may be having, and how we can support that again in those really good, healthy relational ways.
Yeah. So what do you do to take care of yourself? And I know, wow, if anyone could not hear that, Heather laughed really hard just now.
I think like just on the topic of like Native American Heritage Month, I think I saw something too when, you know, the election results were posted. Someone said, I believe it was a Native person, but they said Native American Heritage Month is canceled because of this bad news. And really, that I think that's the complete opposite of what needs to happen. If anything, we need to amplify the importance of this month and why just the fact that we're still here is, you know, that wasn't part of the plan. I mean, it was part of our plan. It might not have been a part of, you know, oppressors' plans, but it's Native American Heritage Month. And I think, you know, it's important to recognize that we get our strength from a lot of things, you know, like the natural world, being in nature, but also our ancestors. And I don't know if we talk about like a lot where you come from, Heather, but you are, you know, Yankton Sioux tribe. And in this Native American Heritage Month, what do you bring forward with you that gives you strength?
We're the land of the friendly people. Like, I really remember that a lot. You know, leaning into hateful situations, I remember that that's who I'm from. I'm from the land of the friendly people, and I like to educate people on who we are. I've come a long ways, you know, through my work in healthcare and Indian education, and now in policy and the work I do in my business. You know, I've been able to build good relationships with people on the other side of the aisle. Like, I know we're devastated, but I want to reassure people that, you know, there's good Republicans in the world that want to do good work for us. And when we educate each other and we really have those honest conversations, we can break down some really significant walls. And so, you know, there are opportunities for us here to like collectively work together. I do want to go back to like Robert's question about what I do, like what Thank I you. Do, because it's funny is I'm trying to sew. And so I, before my time is up here, I'm trying to learn how to sew. I'm trying to like make my own ribbon skirts, ribbon shirts, like my son's regalia, my stuff. And so I hope to lean into like classes and things that are happening in the community when I'm in the cities, because I'm building a plan. Because I think building a plan to protect your mental health is really, really important. And I think we all need to do that rather than when we're in like crisis, trying to lean out to people, that's really hard. And so I've been like trying to figure out food plans, figure out water plans, making sure I have time to say no to things, creating boundaries and sleep. Those things are really, really important. And so those are the things I'm going to try, you know, like it's a practice, I think.
Yeah, and a discipline. And I've been looking at my trumpet to start playing my trumpet again and start out with the blues scales because I kind of got the blues.
Yeah. I mean, lean into it, I guess. Huh? Are we going to start having like a music like segment too?
Yeah.
I think, we should.
And I know Haley would be leading that way. Well, we're having a music segment after this, and I know you have to leave us soon, but we're going to be playing some jams here in the second hour, and then we're going to have Angie Vig from Vig Guitars join us. So that ought to be a lot of fun if she's doing okay. She had to run somewhere real quick, and hopefully she'll be able to make it. If That's not, cool. We'll be calling you up again, Heather.
Hey, I got things to do after 8. I told y'all, I'm on a commission.
She's right? Learning to say no.
See, these are my boundaries. Right. But you talk about guitar. I've always wanted to be a bass player. I think that'd be like the coolest thing to play.
Are you right-handed?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know why I had to think about that. But yeah, I have been my whole life.
Okay. Well, some people are like me. I kick with my left hand, shoot hockey with my left hand, write with my right hand.
You kick with your left hand?
You kick? Wow.
Oh, dang.
That's impressive.
Yeah, it is.
You guys are attacking me and listening closely, I see. That's good that you're listening to me.
Active listening.
But yeah, so I think I'm ambidextrous, but don't ask me to spell it.
Right. Well,
we won't.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I wouldn't know if you were right or not.
I was going to say, because I'm not sure I'd know how to correct you or not.
Yeah, well, there's the Googles. Well, State Representative, what do we have to look forward to? I mean, we need to really pay attention to what's happening at the Capitol here mm-hmm. in Minnesota and mm-hmm. what's happening to our people. We had President of Ho-Chunk Nation, John Greendeer, on. And, you know, I think I kind of got the vibe that we need to fight like we have the last 500 years.
Mm-hmm. Right. So easy ways to do that. I talk a lot about, like, what does session look like in Minnesota, right? We know the landscape and here we are. We go into session in January, February, March is when we start doing all of our committee hearings. This is when it's really important for you as Minnesotans to engage. You know, this is when we need testifiers to come in and talk about why our bills are important, why the work we do is critical. You know, that could be anything. We have hundreds and thousands, right? It feels like, of issues that we address, that something has to matter to you. Like, if you're mad today or in the last week, something mattered to you, right? And so tell your story, because the stories of the mom in Greater Minnesota, you know, talking about the education system that she needs, the individual from Minneapolis talking about access to mental health, the people from Greater Minnesota talking about agriculture, right? Like, there's all kinds of things that we all have really passionate interest in. And I want to encourage you all to show up, right? Letters. We have done a lot to be able to have Zoom access. As your Greater Minnesota member who drives, you know, a significant amount, I know it's unfair for our communities and our tribal nations to drive 3 hours one way to go testify for 2 minutes. And so we have Zoom opportunities, and it's really meaningful to engage. And I want to give an example of what has happened in something. And so I am the chair of the attendance, what is it called? The Legislative Attendance and Truancy Study Group. We're looking at attendance and how that matters. And, you know, it's the typical school districts and counselors and students, and that's great. But we had one of the council members from White Earth come on and talk about Rising and talk about how the school, you know, year, calendar year is built around agriculture, but whose agriculture? Not ours, right? Like, our Rising is really the first good chunk of school. And then we have some areas of the state that kids are missing more than those 15 days because they're doing the number one thing that's the economic driver in their community. And it was so eye-opening, you know, to all of us sitting at the table. And so that's what happens when you show up and you tell your story. And so, you know, I'm obviously, I want more of us to run and sit at the tables, you know, at the seats, but there are other ways that you can sit at the table with us. And it's testifying, and it's engaging, and it's following the legislators that you know do the work in the areas that you like, following the committees that you know, want to follow, if it's healthcare, if it's public safety, if it's, you know, whatever it is. And so hopefully when I come back, we can talk more about that, because I think that's the big piece that we're missing, is we asked everybody to engage with us by voting. And we did that. But you also have to engage with us by telling the stories.
All right. Wow. What great way to end this segment. Thank you, State Representative Heather Keeler. And I will be down at the Capitol, as you know, testifying on a few things here. So a great, great way to end this segment. And a big peeny geeky, thank you so much for being on. This is State Representative Heather Keeler, and this is Native Roots Radio on KFAI.
Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI FM Minneapolis St. Paul, online and archived at kfai.org, the community's true voice.
Sunrise Banks is proud to sponsor Turtle Island's Voices Rising on KFAI. At Sunrise Banks, your financial choices give you power. As a certified B Corp, their innovative banking services